Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CrimeWire Investigates, an elite team of veteran investigation experts along with noted crime consultants and attorneys often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crimes to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team this evening, prosecutor and women in crime contributor Donna Pendergrass, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there on the top of the crime, at the top of their game. CrimeWire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. You can also join our live chat going on right now at blogtalkradio.com/crimewire. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to send the CrimeWire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or if you'd like the CrimeWire team to consider your case for a future show, please just email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Tonight's resident crime expert with us for the entire hour, or unless his battery goes out, is Peter Hyatt from Maine. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's take a moment and discuss, you know, Donna Pendergrass, you wrote one hell of an article over on Women in Crime today, titled, The Apple Doesn't Fall Far from the Tree. And it's about DNA databases. And I think if you could just enlighten our viewers enough to whet their appetite to get their derriers over to Women in Crime, Inc., what made you put this piece together?
Well, you know, Susan, actually it was a case that just occurred earlier that month. But before I even get there, so our listeners understand what familial DNA is, familial DNA is basically based on the fundamental principle that DNA profiles of persons who are related are likely to contain similarities. Parents, siblings, and even more distant relatives like aunts, uncles, and cousins can be linked to crimes because a relative's DNA really closely resembles the DNA of a person that was left behind at a crime scene often. And the development of DNA databases is helping investigators solve crimes by now looking for genetic near matches to solve crimes. Most recently, that was the case in the case of what's known as the Grim Sleeper, Lonnie David Franklin, suspected serial killer, was apprehended earlier this month by comparing DNA found at some of the crime scenes with his son's DNA. The son had been incarcerated in a California prison on a weapons charge. Franklin himself did not have a DNA profile stored in the state of California's database because even though he had been arrested twice before, both times he had been incarcerated in the county jail, which did not have a DNA database. So using kind of a controversial policy that California adopted in 2008, they ran the DNA profiles left from crimes left over a 30-year span through their database, and all of a sudden, lo and behold, they match it very closely, and it turns out to be the son of the person who was just apprehended. This is the second time in the last 5 years where they have apprehended the serial murderer using this DNA, near genetic match DNA. So there are obviously issues of, you know, unwarranted searches and constitutional issues involved, but it's very exciting new technology, and God knows people in the, you know, in the law enforcement world like me and you and everybody else that we've got on the show tonight are very excited about the potential.
Yeah, Denny, when you were on the job, did you ever think the technology all those years ago, I'm not trying to date you, sir, but all those years ago, I know, but all those years ago that would evolve to this, to where we are today?
Not even the thought entered my mind.
I mean, were you still typing on the old Smith and you know, that old typewriter for reports? You guys didn't even have computers.
No. No. Things have changed for the better, for the most part.
In your world, though, have you seen, even in the cases that you do now, that how much technology aids, not just DNA, but other technologies really aiding these cases and solving them?
Absolutely. There's no question. And, you know, I always think when I watch a lot of military movies, I'm a war buff, and when I see some of the World War One stuff and World War, and then think of what we got today, and that same awe applies to me when I think about the technology and police work.
But Peter Hyatt, you know, you're on. Do you still use old-fashioned police work with a lot of what you do as far as your investigations? Does that still work for you?
Oh, yeah. What's really amazing is that the last 15 years since the Internet, information has exploded. It's just incredible, and we can pass information back and forth really at the speed of light. Yet it comes down to, for the work I do, it comes down to the old-fashioned interview with some of the research that we have from the 1920s, 1930s, and the early days of the polygraphy and the polygraph machines. We have that research. We use it. It's just that we share it a lot faster now.
Well, everybody, go over to Women in Crime, Inc. It's Donna Pendergrass's piece, and it's really worth the read. It's womenincrimeinc.blogspot.com, where you can read Pat Brown, Diane Diamond, Robin Sachs, Stacey Dietrich, myself included, every day, 5 days a week. Donna, why don't you introduce our next guest, please?
Okay, I sure will. We're going to turn now to the case of Kelly Sue Eckernight. Kelly Sue was last seen September 30th, 2008, leaving her job as a shift supervisor at Amsterdam Rite Aid about 9:45 p.m. She was driving a 10-year-old Saturn sedan. 3 hours later, the police found the car engulfed in flames a few blocks from her home in Johnstown, New York, with no sign of Kelly Sue. The car was parked in an area neighbors call Frog Hollow, near the rail trail. Police said this street wasn't the usual way that Kelly Sue drove home. The car was completely destroyed by the fire. Joining us on the show tonight is family spokesperson Callie Lee. Callie, one thing that has really struck me about this case, you know, well, a lot of things have struck me about it, but one thing in particular is that from what I've read, the police woke up Kelly Sue's husband at 2:45 in the morning, and he didn't even know that she wasn't there or that she was missing. Now, that strikes me as a little odd. If a woman who leaves work at 9:45 p.m. and is supposed to be home fairly shortly doesn't come home, number one, that her spouse could even fall asleep, number two, that he's not out looking for her, and number three, that the police would seemingly wake him up and he'd have no idea that, well, not only that she was missing, but her car was on fire, you know, a short distance away. Something doesn't ring true there. Something bothers me about that, and I'm just wondering if you can give us a little insight as to the relationship between Kelly Sue and her husband around the time of her disappearance.
I believe around the time of their disappearance, they were having some very, very, very difficult marital issues. I know that Jason goes to bed early by 9 o'clock each night. That seems to be his pattern. I think he would have noticed if Kelly Sue didn't come home, which I find odd that he didn't look for her sooner than 2:45.
But also, Kelly Sue... Yeah, you know, there's a difference with, you know, wasn't he a volunteer fireman, Jason? Isn't he?
Jason is still a volunteer fireman.
Okay. And I remember about a year and a half ago on another show, we talked about how he, like, on his Facebook profile, he said he liked fires.
Yes, he liked campfires.
Yeah. Yes, that's so romantic.
Yeah.
And if you're so saddened by somebody who has just up and gone, why the hell are you dating or trying to find a relationship? And you put in there, I remember it said complicated. You know, why would you put that in there?
Very complicated. He was actually removed from college just recently as well.
Jason was.
Sexual harassment on the college campus, and they have put a restraining order on him. He's not allowed on New York State campuses.
What about the photo, which is not around? I think a reporter had taken it where the glasses were on the ground. By the charred, you know, car.
I have to find that photo, but I'm going to get that, and I will post it back up on her Facebook. But, yes, I've seen that photo. I know what you're talking about.
Peter Hyatt, weigh in. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Donna. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Kelly, from what I know of this case, one thing that I understand is that Kelly Sue was very close to her daughter. I mean, in your mind, in your wildest dreams, is there any possibility that Kelly Sue would just take off and leave her daughter behind?
It's a good possibility with the information we have today.
That she would leave her daughter?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Go on, Susan.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, well, let me ask you this. Are you saying that you think that this was a voluntary disappearance as opposed to, you know, some kind of foul play? I mean, to me, cars don't just spontaneously combust and their drivers disappear at the same time. I mean, to me, that conjunction of circumstances seems extremely odd. It doesn't suggest a voluntary disappearance to me.
It's very difficult. It puts us on the wire because it's such a difficult case, and there's so much more to it at this point that the police department is now finding out all these, you know, 2 years later almost.
So they believe she's alive.
That's what we're looking at, yes.
Peter Hyatt, weigh in. Weigh in for me, please.
Yeah, please. Could you talk a little bit about the love of fire? Was that something that he actually wrote?
Yes.
Yes.
Because it's significant. People will choose what's most important to them to write and share with others. Did that exhibit itself in any type of behavior that you noticed, or I mean, even around family barbecues? Anything that you saw that was concerning or alarming?
Because that was right away, Peter. Real quick. I mean, that's what concerned me when I started reading his profile. I saw fire, 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 fire. You know, that was a red flag to me.
It is. Yeah, you're correct. There is a red flag, and there's relations between that and violence. So. Did you see anything that concerned you?
With Jason, yes. He enjoys getting into other people's personal space. He also is very proud of being a fireman and almost brags about the fact of being part of big fires and pulling people from fires. That's his big accomplishments in life is fire.
When you say he likes to get into people's personal space, is that physically where he stands close to them?
Oh, yeah. He's been close to me where he's been physically 5 feet away from me, but I feel like he's like an inch from me.
Is he seeking to intimidate?
I'm sorry, Peter.
I don't know if it's intimidation or if he just has no boundaries.
Go ahead, Donna.
Kelly, did it raise any red flags with you? I mean, when you hear that her car is found, you know, engulfed in flames, not that far from her house, and you know that Jason, you know, is in fact a volunteer firefighter. I mean, did you ever make any kind of neck connection and say, well, that's really kind of odd?
Yes, I have. Actually, being that the rail trail is literally a 30-second run from his house to where her car was burnt. So, yes, it brings up a lot of red flags.
Denny,
okay.
Weigh in, will
you? I'm sorry.
Denny, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, did I hear you correctly, Kelly, that you said right now it's kind of an open question whether this was a voluntary disappearance?
Yes.
It's
like we're on the line here. We literally don't know what to do. I know investigators have sat down with us, and it's like we don't know where to go from this point.
Can we do something? Can Peter and I talk to you after the show or tomorrow? I think there's some things in here that are disturbing that sometimes people don't see, that it throws you off, it disarms you.
Yep.
And maybe you're not, you know, looking at the same thing, because when I spoke to her brother a year and a half ago, Tom, you know, there was other things in this with, you know, the relationship with the husband. There was a lot of things that were very disturbing, and sometimes as a family member, and it's not to discredit or say, you know, anybody's right or wrong here.
Yep.
But you want the answer so badly, you're going to listen to something or someone perhaps that isn't seeing something else, and somebody else is trying to throw them off.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
So what you think really happened, and what we discussed before we came on the show that we cannot discuss, I don't think that's the case. And I mean that.
Yep.
Just because of other, because we do this all day long.
Yeah, I understand.
And, It's nothing to say, you know, the law enforcement that's involved in this, they're wonderful, they're great, but they don't do these cases 24/7.
Exactly.
And Peter does, and Donna does, and I do, and Denny does, and that's why you're on the show. So whether you think that she could be, somebody else, I think, and Peter, I think you would agree, somebody's laying a trail then. That's what I think.
Oh, yeah. I want some answers with that.
Kelly, let me ask this.
There's no such thing as a coincidence.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a coincidence. And, Kelly, let me ask you this.
Okay.
I mean, would have that been normal behavior for Kelly Sue to start her car on fire and just disappear? I mean, you know, everything I've read about her, she was a fairly responsible citizen. She held a job. You know, she was a manager or a shift supervisor, rather. You know, she took care of her daughter. Her daughter was adequately fed, clothed, and there was a very close relationship mm-hmm. between them. I mean, she functioned like a normal, whatever a normal human being is. But, you know, disappearing off the face of the earth with your car left behind in flames, I mean, had she
and your glasses. Donna, she has to see with her glasses. She doesn't.
Yeah.
She has to drive with those goddamn things.
Yeah.
And they're on the road? I'm sorry. It's disturbing.
I mean, she's never done anything or staged anything bizarre before that caused you to think, well, she's a little off, has she? So, I mean, isn't this all, like, very unusual and out of keeping with what you knew of your friend?
It is unusual, but the thing is the domestic violence and the abuse that she suffered at the hands of her in-laws and her husband, they've pushed me over the edge, so I don't know. I don't know where her mind.
Are you saying they pushed you over the edge with trying
with
to make
the,
it seem like something else other than what it could be to take the
with,
focus off of the husband, perhaps?
With their threats, they've tried to have me arrested for having her website.
Okay. So stop right there, Peter. Wait a minute, Peter. You've got to address this, please.
Yeah, there's a fear that they have, and they're withholding information from you. Otherwise, they wouldn't be striking out that way. Because this is the type of thing that innocent people don't do. It's not a behavior of them. So I would
Thank
really like
you.
I have a lot of questions for you, but
okay.
probably if I could after tomorrow even.
I'll email you her number, Peter, because you really there and the conversation, whatever Peter says to you, it stays between you and he. You don't spread it around. You don't put it on a website.
Yep.
There's a lot of reasons
yep.
for that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
let me ask a question if I could. It seems as though for an adult to virtually vanish from the face of the earth for this amount of time, almost 2 years now, wouldn't have been a spur-of-the-moment decision. I mean, you'd almost have to have some plan in place, I would think, wouldn't you?
She doesn't fit the profile. This girl does not, she, from day one, she does not fit the profile.
No, she doesn't. No, I agree.
Okay. So then why are you letting people sway you with other things? It's difficult. I know it's hard because you've been doing this for 2 years, and you're keeping her alive. And if there's a slim chance that she is, you know, then that's wonderful. But she does not fit what somebody like this would do. She didn't have that kind of a life, regardless of what she may or may not have done, regardless of what other people may have said to you, to put, again, the focus on somebody else because it takes it off of them. They're disarming you. That's what abusers do, everybody. They disarm the victims, families. They want somebody and the focus and the attention to go someplace else, don't they, Peter?
Oh, they're just as violent. The ones that are not doing anything physically are being just as violent emotionally to you to back you up. So they probably enabled the violence in the first place, but now they're protecting it.
That solidifies what I've been feeling. I've been wondering if I've been being sideswiped almost.
You go with your gut.
Well, you know,
okay.
Kelly, if I could chime in here for a minute, you know, something inside you obviously feels that something is wrong because otherwise you wouldn't have kept this in the media forefront for the last 2 years. I mean, a part of you has made this, for lack of a better term, a crusade.
Oh, yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, there's a strong part of you where something's not adding up here.
Exactly.
And even though part of you, you know, tends to be, you know, okay, well, they said this, they said that, and you tend to take it at face value, and then you start second-guessing yourself. But you wouldn't have kept this at the forefront of attention and spent as much time as you have keeping it you know, at the forefront of media attention, unless he felt something was wrong. I mean, that,
yeah.
I'm not putting thoughts in your mind here, but that's what rings true to me as a prosecutor.
No, there is something wrong. There's something so wrong. I live in this community. I'm the same age as Kelly, a year younger, and it bothers me when I walk out of work and my coworkers walk out of work. You have to have somebody with you because it doesn't takes a second. You could be gone. There's something wrong.
And she's not, you know, if you look at her, I'm not, you know, but from the photos, it's not somebody that would do things. You know, her husband's very good looking from what I saw from the photos.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty hot.
He's
okay.
A charmer. Oh, sure.
Okay. Yeah. And oh, my, who does that remind everybody of?
He's got those killer blue eyes.
That's right. He's a hot-looking guy.
He's got Peterson eyes. Sure he does.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
He's a hot-looking guy.
Sure.
Who doesn't, when I first saw the two of them, I thought, what are they doing together?
He's a charmer. Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. And was she, what did she look like in person?
She's very plain, and she doesn't stand out like Jason does.
Okay. Peter, what does that tell you?
Yeah, she may have been easily manipulated. Just
yeah.
Someone that really just took a look at him. And remember, we think about Scott Peterson sometimes. We think about these charmers and their good looks, and they think they can pull the wool over anyone's eyes. But they need control. If they lose control, they could become very dangerous. I'm upset about what the family's been doing, though. I'm upset about how they're kind of pulling the gates closed tight and making her feel like she's the one that's causing problems. You're looking for answers, aren't they?
No,
they don't look
they're not.
No.
And from day one, he's been on his, he was, I'm not his friend anymore. I'm sure that's no surprise to anybody listening, and I'm sure that he's listening, but he took me off his Facebook once he realized that I had given his, you know, MO on the air, you know, piece by piece. And he was on there pretty quick after she died, or after she went missing, pretty quick.
Oh, sure.
That's not a grieving husband.
It was December.
Pretty quick and looking.
Yeah, Donna, how many cases have you seen where, you know, these guys are right there trolling the Internet or they have a girlfriend right away?
And he would have been on there sooner, but the police had his computer until December.
Well, that makes us all laugh. Oh, my.
How is her daughter doing, Kaylee?
As far as I know, I've lost communication with her. She's doing good from what I can see.
Is she with the father specifically?
She's with her father. The last time I was by there, she was out swimming in her pool and had a whole group of kids in there with her. So that's
how old would she be now?
Ashley will be 12 in October.
Okay.
There is a restraining order between Kelly Sue's brother Tom and Jason. Jason did that, accused Tom of harassment.
Is that why Jason didn't come on the show this evening?
Maybe.
Okay. That's silly because this is about somebody that's missing that we need to find the answers for. And
yeah.
Don't let anybody intimidate you. He's not having contact with him because we're having the show. He's not a guest on the show, okay?
Yep.
So in the future, if we do something like this or I do something with you and call you, he should come on. Because we have to give these victims a name, a face, an identity. People have to know that they were real. And the majority of them in these situations just didn't jump off a bridge.
And I've included Jason in every single thing that we've done for Kelly Sue, and every time I include him, he takes my email to the Johnstown Police Department and wants to have me arrested.
Oh, Peter, what does that mean?
Yeah, this is a fear issue now, so don't mistake the anger, it's fear.
Okay.
So you are on the right track. You keep up, and now what's happening this week with the Q Center is going to be out there, and I'm sure they're angry about this because if they find that body, you know, there's going to be somebody going to pay for it.
Yeah.
So the Q Center is coming out by you in Johnstown, New York, this week, next week, when?
On August 23rd, they're coming out.
And what are they going to be doing?
They're going to have their rally, and they're going to sell their T-shirts and their memorabilia from the road tour. We're having a basket raffle, gift baskets. All the proceeds go to Q Center in the name of Kelly Sue. And we're also trying to raise $500 for a printing fee for a billboard for Kelly to put up in the downtown area.
Have you been able to try to get people, maybe companies in the outside area who could perhaps donate the billboard?
Thursday, we're going to hit the pavement.
Okay.
And see what we can get from our community.
Go ahead, Donna.
Susan, if I might, the Q Center, Kelly, just so the listeners understand, that's the Community United Effort. What exactly is their mission or goal? What do they do?
They will help us look for Kelly Sue, organize searches, raise national awareness about her case. They'll keep her listed on their site, and they'll help us organize getting a billboard made for her to put up locally.
And they've been very successful across the country. They've
yes.
have found many, many. Monica Q is 24/7.
Yeah,
she is the world's most renowned person as far as finding missing persons in this country. They're a 501c3, and we support them here on the show, and I hope that you will as well, because they are phenomenal. And maybe Delilah or somebody in the chat room could put up the link, because they do go out there. I smell out offenders, and she smells out dead bodies. I mean, we're kind of counterparts in a different kind of way, but this woman walks and talks and breathes finding people's loved ones, and she's very good at it.
And Johnstown Police totally support Q coming. They sat down and did the paperwork with me for 3 hours in April for this. So, yeah, we have lots of support.
And how, so when you're out there, are you, what other kind of resistance have you been met with when you're trying to get the information out there?
Excuse me?
What other, have you been met with any other resistance? Have you yourself, if you're getting harassed by them, have you tried to file against them for harassing you? Do they call you?
I actually tried to have Jason spoke to, because he harassed me over Facebook, and the idea was Detective Gilbo of Johnstown PD said, please block him on both ends off of your private Facebook and Kelly Sue's Facebook. And that's the best way we can handle this is just ignore him.
And why don't you give the website out, please?
Kelly Sue has a website. It's kellysue@wordpress.com.
Kelly Sue.
At WordPress.
.com.
KELLISUE at WordPress.com.
Yep.
And the Johnson Police Department, if anybody has any information, it's 518-762-4021. Go ahead, Denny. Do you want to ask Callie anything?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment about the idea of getting the publicity. I know you've been doing that, but the we had a guest on the show a few weeks ago, Jackie McDonald, and her daughter was murdered, and the case had gone cold, and she did what you are starting to do here with the billboards and stuff. And in fact, the billboard actually led to the identifying and arresting and convicting the killer. So that
that's
stuff does work.
For.
It's really, yeah, absolutely. That's a great move, and I certainly hope things work out for you, that you can get the backing.
We're hoping so, because the last vigil we had for Kelly Sue, Jason actually called our media outlets and told them that we canceled her vigil, and he pulled down every poster we had for her up.
Oh, that's Drew Peterson walking and talking. Oh, my God.
So we're hoping
people
results
do what
from
they have
billboard.
To do for a reason.
Exactly.
That's right, and that's not normal behavior, just so you know.
No. No, hey, can I ask Denny a question? Denny, does this sound like something that would be applicable for the questionnaire?
I was going to mention it. Absolutely. I really believe it would be a perfect fit.
It sounds like it. I think I'll be able to be in contact tomorrow, and we can talk about that a little bit. But it would be a way of reaching out to the community, that anyone, what it would show us in this voluntary questionnaire is that if anyone is withholding information, we'll know it.
Okay.
That's the key. We'll know it. And that can help the police focus, and I'll be glad to share it with them if they haven't gone that route yet.
Okay. That would be great.
What you're doing is great. And what about trying to contact some of the other shows on Blog Talk to see if you can get the information out there? I mean, I know that we've got Janice Smolensky. I can never say her name, and I apologize. Janice Smolensky is coming on. She is Help Find the Missing Act that she's trying to get passed. And that benefits, you know, it'll benefit Kelly Sue. It benefits every missing person all around the country, and she's going to come on and talk about that. But you start looking on the Blog Talk. Put crime or missing person in the category where Blog Talk is, and start soliciting, saying who you are, and asking if you could be a guest on the show to briefly talk about the case. Okay?
Okay.
That's a way, again, to get the name out. And
that's
then, as I said, between today and tomorrow, I'll exchange numbers with Peter and you, and the two of you can talk. Thank you so much, and keep your head up and do not give up.
Thank you guys for the opportunity so much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. And next, we're going to talk about the Billy Smolinski case. Billy was 31 when he disappeared from Waterbury, Connecticut on August 24th, 2004. Police have said they think he was the victim of foul play. Joining us tonight is National Missing Person Advocate and author of the legislation Help Find the Missing Act, Bill's mother, Janice Smolinski. Janice, welcome.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And could you take us back, if you would, please, to August 24th of 2004 and kind of set the stage for that day, what was going on, and what happened?
Well, my son went to Florida with his girlfriend, and he spent 5 days there. When he came back, he had found out that his girlfriend was having an affair with a married politician. He confronted the politician, and 2 days later, he disappeared. He actually told his neighbor that he was going up north for a few days, and that was pretty much an alarm for us because we knew that Billy would not have taken off without telling his family. We were very close. He left his dog, a German Shepherd, Harley, in the house, and when the neighbor was going over to feed the dog, there was no key. So he called my son's girlfriend that he had dated for 8 years previous to this other woman he was dating, that he couldn't get in the house to feed Billy's dog. She alerted us, and we called the police immediately because we knew this was not Billy's personality. But the police told us we had to wait 3 days. And on the third day, we did go down, and we reported him missing. The only thing is the police actually didn't really take it seriously. They found Billy's keys and wallet under the seat of his truck 2 weeks later, and it was the second set of detectives that found the keys and wallet. We really had to fight a hard battle to get to the point where we are right now.
Why don't you, don't go further than that, why don't you talk about, this is the mother, everybody, who has been trying to get information out there from day one, who works 24/7 on the internet, and you have been met with resistance. Arrested, tried to be kept quiet, haven't you?
Yes, actually we have been, and I really don't know why we're trying to figure that out ourselves. But, you know, we know that our case is not the only case that has having problems. Missing adults are having a huge problem. There were flyers being torn down, and when we went to the police department to find answers and plead for help, my daughter and myself, were threatened with 5 charges. We had later found out that the reason why the 5 charges were pressed against us is because they didn't want to take our videotape to Channel 8 News. My daughter and I got up and left. 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from the police department saying that to turn myself in as a criminal or I would be handcuffed and brought in. So, in the
chat room, they're asking about the politician. Was he married?
Yes.
And is that politician still in office now?
No, the politician is not in office now. He resigned after his name was brought out into public. And
on this case?
Yes. Oh, well, I don't know if it was on this case. Once his name came out from this case out into the public, he resigned quietly, and we have not heard from him since, and it's been several years. I don't know what he's up to now, but I can say his name because it's been out into the papers. His name is Chris Sorensen.
What about the girlfriend? Was she? They hadn't been going out very long, had they?
Yes, they were. The married politician, yes, they were going out for quite a while. My son did not know about it. My son actually worked for Chris Sorensen for quite a while. My son had a CDL license, so he was able to drive heavy trucks, and Chris had hired my son to drive trucks to different areas. Billy was also a school bus driver. He drove bus for Chris when he needed it, and he also drove school bus for another school bus company where Madeline had worked. So Billy and Madeline were very close, and they even got closer when Madeline's daughter hung herself.
What?
Well,
yeah.
Go ahead, Donna.
Janice, let me ask you this. My understanding is the week before Billy disappeared, he actually went on vacation to Florida, flew there, which was somewhat unusual for him because he really wasn't all that big on flying, but went there and, for lack of a better term, things didn't go so well. He noticed that Madeline was getting calls on her cell phone, kind of skulking about and going into the shower to receive them, and he began to suspect that maybe she was involved with somebody else. Do you think that prior to this Florida trip, which occurred only a week, I mean, I think they were only back 48 hours before he disappeared, do you think he had any idea that there was another relationship other than the one he was involved with Madeline, that she might be seeing someone else?
Absolutely not. No, and, you know, Billy, he really loved her. He really did, and he did everything for her. So when he did find out that this was between Madeline and Chris, it was crushing to him. And
I know this is 2010, and, you know, it isn't all that unusual, but this was a little bit different of a relationship in that she was a great deal older than Billy, wasn't she?
Yes, she's 4 years younger than I am, so she actually could have been his mother. But, you know,
okay, so he was 31, and she was, what, 47 at the time?
Yeah, probably around that, yes.
Yeah, okay.
15 years older than Billy.
Okay.
So Billy is pretty much old-fashioned. So, you know, when he dated people, he expected for them not to see other people as well as he would not see anyone himself. So it was crushing to him.
Peter, hi.
He expected loyalty.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's just a natural thing. Did he have a mental health history?
Oh, he was fine.
any diagnosis?
No, he was absolutely fine.
And how old was he when he got married?
Billy? He never was married.
No, he wasn't married.
Oh,
no,
they weren't married.
No,
I'm sorry. I thought they were married.
He was never married, or he never had children. No, he was just Billy. You know, he lived at his house for 5 years. He owned his own home. He had three jobs that he helped pay his bills. And, you know, he was very happy the way he was. He was dating before Madeline, Mary Ellen, and Mary Ellen was his love for 8 years. So after Billy and Madeline broke up, Billy had seen Mary Ellen right before he disappeared. He was driving his tow truck for his regular job, and he saw her on the street, and he asked her to go to Riverside, which was Six Flags in Massachusetts, the following Saturday. It was pretty much Mary Ellen felt it was a date he wanted to start up with her again. And she was probably right. Mary Ellen was always a special person in his life. So I think that maybe one day they would have married and had their own children, and we were pretty much deprived of what could have been.
But you are a special woman. I mean, you, Denny, we don't see mothers like this, I mean, who want to make sure and go out and find their child, do we, Denny? Not like this.
No, we don't. It's very rare.
Oh, how could you give up on a child, though? You know, you've raised them all these years, and you raised them when we raised them as good of a Christian as we could. And you know, when you push them out of the nest and when it's time for them to leave, you know, with your values in life, you expect them to continue on. But, you know, they're not ready for the real world, and there are people out there that...
Janice, what did it tell you? To me, one of the huge red flags in this case was when the police ultimately found his wallet and his car keys up under the seat in his truck. I mean, when you heard that fact, I mean, what did you think?
We were devastated. You know, we were all sitting around the table in Billy's house, and the detective came in and threw everything on the table. And Mary Ellen started crying. That was her key, that something was desperately wrong. We knew. But, you know, when you go to the police department, you expect the police to be there. And when it comes to a missing adult, you know, all we got was no body, no case. He's probably in Europe having a beer. He'll be home when he's ready. My daughter had to go into the police department and start yelling at the detectives and said, "My brother's missing. We need help." Well, you know, after pounding on the doors and everything, you know, finally you do get headway, but it takes a long time. And my daughter actually called in the dogs herself to do some searching. And
Peter, Peter asked the faith question because you asked it so eloquently on another show.
Mm-hmm.
How has going through this, how has it impacted your faith and your ability to continue to press on?
Faith has gotten a lot stronger. I feel that this has happened for a reason. And, you know, with all the things that have happened and all the disconnects in the country, listening to the different families that can't continue on, I feel strongly enough that I'm going to continue this. And when Billy's found, I'm going to continue it till the day I die. There's too much going on out there, and families are just hurting desperately, and you know that.
Janice, you're talking about disconnects in the case. Can you just tell the readers, like in a thumbnail sketch, you know, the top five things that don't add up in this case for you? What are the disconnects? I mean, you know, your son is seen at Burger King. He has a meal. He asks his neighbor to take care of his dogs, which you have already told us is a little unusual. And then he just disappears off the face of the earth. I'll start with number one. Number one being his keys and his wallet are found in his car, and his car is there. So, okay. That certainly suggests that he didn't just take off and go have a beer in Europe or whatever the investigator said. But what else is just not sitting right with you in his disappearance? What are the next four things that you can give me to make a top five that just don't sit right with you?
His truck was parked at the beginning of his driveway, and he would
have never. Significant why?
Because he would have never parked his truck at the beginning of the driveway. It was always as close to the door as it could be, so he didn't have to walk very far. We never, ever saw his truck parked there. We brought it to the police attention, and they pretty much ignored it. As far as anything else?
I mean, his relationship with Madeline, I mean, did that not sit well with you? I mean, was there something that, you know, causes you to have concern in that regard?
Well, the relationship, because she was an older woman, you know.
Okay.
When you're dealing with a 31-year-old son, you express your opinions to him, but that's all you could do is express an opinion. And, you know,
why don't you tell our readers about the flyers that you're posting around town and, you know, did anything unusual happen that caused, you know, a red flag in your mind in regards to those flyers?
Yes. Immediately we started hanging flyers. And probably, I'd say, 3 weeks into the case, flyers were starting to disappear. And we knew that something was going on. So somebody had called me with a license plate number down in almost into New Haven. It was in front of a bank that they had seen a woman stand on top of the bumper of her car and tear down a flyer. And they gave me the license plate number. So I had someone run the number, and it was back to Madeline Gleason, Billy's girlfriend. So now we knew who was tearing down the flyers. And that started a whole fiasco, probably for about a year and a half. Every other day, we would hang flyers, and they would be torn down. We went through thousands and thousands of flyers. There's a littering fine in Connecticut for $219 if you litter in any town. Well, Woodbridge was full of flyers. People's yards had flyers in them. It was a mess. Actually, somebody had a flyer in their garden, and she called me, and, you know, she wanted to express her sympathy because she had found one of Billy's flyers in her garden. The school bus company, actually the flyers were full in the baskets of Madeline and her friend Fran, who were driving the buses, and one of the bus company older employees had stopped me in his school bus and said, if you go into the company, their huge bin in the company is full of flyers, my son's flyers. We tried getting attention to help us, and no one was there. And the only attention we did get was me being arrested as a criminal, and that was just for hanging a flyer of my son on a public telephone pole.
Well, did you confront her? I mean, you know, your son is involved with this woman, mm-hmm. and, you know, you find evidence, I mean, documented evidence that she's tearing down flyers that are advertising his disappearance and asking for information. Did you ever go to her and say, hey, what are you doing? Aren't you trying to help us find him? I mean, that,
yes.
or was there some reason you couldn't approach her?
Yeah, no, I did. We did have confrontation a couple of times, and she told me that we were harassing her. And I said, how are we harassing you? You know, your name isn't on these flyers, and we're looking for Billy. And not only are the flyers in Woodbridge, but they're in Seymour and Oxford and Waterbury and Naugatuck and surrounding towns extending into states. I mean, it wasn't just my husband and I and my daughter hanging flyers. It was friends and family. My brother and sister-in-law sat in the cemetery along with my daughter so they could videotape her tearing down the flyers. This was very evident that we needed help, and no one was around to help.
Did the media know that you were being arrested?
Yes. Actually, they didn't know until I had to go to Superior Court, and that's when I went with a reporter. No lawyer. I didn't feel I needed a lawyer.
Sure.
I just went with the reporter, and I was actually sitting next to actual criminals with handcuffs on their wrists and on their ankles. And they kept on taking me into a room, and, you know, I had pictures and videos and everything. But the assistant state's attorney was looking at my affidavit, and he said, okay, criminal trespassing, first degree. He said, disorderly conduct, and I said, I didn't know that I was charged with disorderly conduct. And he said, yeah, but the thing that really bothers me is the paintballing of the school buses. And I said, paintballing of school buses? And he said, yes, it says here that you paintballed two school buses. And I said, at that time, I didn't know what a paintball gun looked like. So, I told him, no, I definitely did not do that. And later we found out that those were false charges. Someone had gone to the state police to look at the record of the paintballing, the charges, and there were no such charges. So actually a judge had signed this, and it was false.
Denny, why do you think that we're seeing these cases like this? We put on the Oklahoma cases that... Why are people that are supposed to be helping to take an oath in office and serve and protect, why do they seem to be harassing or trying to muddy up an investigation or get the information out there?
Well, I was just going to cut in and mention that. Susan asked or commented a few minutes ago that the number of people, mothers like you who are hanging in there after almost 6 years continuing the fight are few and far between. And it isn't that I don't believe other parents don't care, but we're all individuals. We all have our own strengths and weaknesses and tolerances. And after listening to what you've been going through, I know that a lot of people in a similar situation would virtually have been beaten into submission.
Mm-hmm.
The system would have beaten them into submission, especially if it's bad enough that you've got someone ripping down your posters, but when you have the law enforcement, the people you're turning to for help, apparently almost taking an adversarial position, people I've talked with, and I'm sure Susan has, and Peter and Donna, that people just become dispirited. They have the fight taken out of them, basically. So I want to commend you for not being beaten down to the point that you're going to give up, because people have to hang in there and have to keep these cases alive. And I think by getting the word out in shows like this and others, that there are serious problems in some areas. I'm pro-law enforcement. I think the vast majority of the law enforcement personnel are dedicated. They do a great job. But there are exceptions. And
we're seeing
a lot of exceptions,
Danny. Way too many of them.
More than I would like to think. I would like to think there were none. Obviously, that's not true. And I think bringing this stuff to light, these issues to light, is the way that will eventually, and it's not going to happen tonight or tomorrow night or the next night, but eventually, there's the old saying, strength through numbers. And by getting people, by getting the word out that these situations exist, I think is going to go a long way to helping to eliminate or at least reduce the cases, so we don't have to be every week talking about more and more of these, you know, very frustrating, unfair situations.
Peter,
and
go
ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Janice, if I can you tell our listeners a little bit about the Help Find the Missing Act, you know, in the interest of fighting the fight and keeping things going? Can you tell them a little bit about what that's all about?
Absolutely, yes. With this battle trying to find my son, I found Billy's NCIC report was done wrong. I found there was a disconnect between medical examiners and law enforcement, and I had to fax a flyer to the medical examiner's office in case a John Doe came in. 7 separate DNA samples were lost that were taken from my daughter and myself, and it was actually the FBI who took the 8th and entered it into CODIS. I found out that our local law enforcement did not know what CODIS was, and, NAMIS was very early on at that time, so I could understand why they didn't know what NAMIS was. So with that, I went to our congressman and explained the situation of how many missing there are in the United States and how many unidentified there are, and he listened. At first, I didn't think he listened because I just sat there and did my half hour of talking with him, hardly talking at all. And when I left the office, I said to my husband, oh, boy, that didn't go over very well, did it? But actually it did, because he absorbed all the information and went back to his office and learned. And his judiciary staffer learned as well. And I got a phone call saying that he was going to take this on. It went through Congress very well. My husband and I went down in January, and I testified. But now it's on the Senate side. And on the Senate side, it's S-3019, Help Find the Missing Act, Billy's Law. And they wanted to expedite it through the system, but Senator Colburn was holding it back. And
Is he still holding it back now?
Well, yes, he is. So what they did is, instead of expediting it through the system, because all senators, as a trade-off, all senators really have to agree to this bill.
Well, what was the senator's, I forget, wasn't he a doctor in another life?
He's an obstetrician gynecologist, yes.
And he doesn't think that this is a worthy thing to do.
And he doesn't. He thinks it's too expensive. This bill is offering incentives to train, educate law enforcement and medical examiners on entering information properly into NAMIS and collecting DNA and entering it into CODIS, learning the entire system. And NAMIS is the only centralized database in the United States. So I can't understand how any senator could oppose this. They are making matches with NAMIS, but we need education for law enforcement. And my husband and I have gone to, well, we just recently came back from Seattle, Washington, where law enforcement and medical examiners were at the conference. And a lot of law enforcement there didn't even know what NAMIS was. So it's just getting the word out and training the officers. I mean, it's really not that hard.
Is Monica from the...
You have used the word CODIS, and just so our listeners understand, that is basically a national DNA database, a combined DNA database index. And as I understand it, what your goal is with this act is basically you want to, for lack of a better term, close all the gaps mm-hmm. so that there'll just be one search that you'll need to do for missing ones. You know, right now there's no federal mandate, as I understand it, in place to have one system in place. And that really complicates searches because when the government has a database and the FBI has a separate database, it leaves cracks. And, unidentified people can fall through them. So you're trying to solidify the system, if I understand this correctly.
Absolutely. And if you check certain clearinghouses in different states, like, for example, Connecticut. Someone had just notified me that the state police in Connecticut does not have Billy on their missing persons website. And when I questioned the state police about it, they said, oh, no, your son doesn't go on our website. It would be the Waterbury Police Department website for missing persons. And each department would have their own individual missing persons, but yet their computers don't connect. So the disconnects are enormous, and that's not only within Connecticut. That's across the United States. So NamUs was created to be a centralized database, so all this information, and that's DNA and characteristics of the missing person, fingerprints, NCIC number, anything that they could have on that person is put into this database, and anyone has access to it. The information that goes into NamUs could be entered by a family member or by someone, but law enforcement has to approve it before it's actually shown to the public. And it's like having a million eyes looking at NamUs and trying to make matches with the unidentified and the missing persons.
And you just got some good information on a sweatshirt, didn't you, on your son?
Well, I don't know if it was good information. We went out and we searched, and we did find a sweatshirt, and they took it in just in case. It was a weathered sweatshirt. It was in an area in question, and, you know, that was about it. I haven't heard anything since.
Okay. But Monica from the Q Center, aren't they coming through on the tour to you as well?
Yes, they are. On August 22nd, we're having a vigil, and it's also Missing Persons Day in Connecticut. And it just happened, Monica's coming up, and she'll be showing about 7 o'clock that night. So, you know, there's a lot happening here.
Denny, ask the last question because we are out of time.
Yeah, so how would you rate so far the quality of the police investigation? Do you think overall they've done a good job in spite of your run-in you had with them? Or do you think that everything's been done possible, or are there leads that haven't been explored and more that could be done?
We have local, state, and we had federal in on our case. The federal is they've gone. Local and state, well, you know, right now we do have cooperation. It took a lot to get hit to this point that we're at. So, you know, I think we have to constantly bang on doors, and you have to prod them. And as long as you show your face and make phone calls, they're there.
We're out of time, guys. We're going to lose the show. Ms. Smolinski, thank you, Janice. Your website is www.justiceforbilly4billy.com. Go to peaceforthemissing.ning.com for more on Help Find the Missing Act. We're out of time. Thank you to the CrimeWire team, Peter Hyatt, Kim Colton, our public relations at imaginepublicity.com. Our next show will be Tuesday, August 3rd, 2010. Tune in as we... You're welcome. Continue to analyze cases, crimes, and interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight on CrimeWire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guests. If you would like to have your case featured on CrimeWire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com or hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show. Go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play.
And remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you so much. No one give up. Keep on going.
Okay. Thank you, Janet. Thank you very much, Donna.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.